It's time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Last Saturday, I talked to Rebecca Armstrong from Waiheke Coast Guard, Rosalie Hennigan from Waiheke Library, the opinionated islanders Alan Knight and Alex Stone, and I spoke to Millie Watkins about a forthcoming sustainable living course to be held at Waiheke Community Education. You're on Island Life here on Waiheke Radio, and it's time, as it is on the first Saturday of every month, to catch up with Rebecca Armstrong from Waiheke Coast Guard. Good morning, Rebecca. How are you?
Good, thank you. How are you? Happy Easter.
Yeah, happy Easter. Is that what you say? Merry Easter, happy Easter.
I think so, happy Easter.
Yeah. I'll just turn down the seagulls. So we catch up each month to talk about something to do with water safety and the Coast Guard, and we've got all of those available. We're putting all of those up on the website soon, so you can catch up anytime you want with water safety tips. And today we're talking about preventing injuries on boats. So what tips have you got for us, Rebecca?
Well, first of all, it depends on whether you're a sort of a skipper or in charge of a boat or whether you're a passenger on the boat. So I'll talk about it in the two separate ways. So if you're a skipper, we recommend that if you're bringing people on board, just let them know of any hazards on your boat, any safety tips that you've got. Example, you know, if something happens, here's the radio and here's the first aid kit, that sort of thing. When you're at the helm, when you're driving your boat, you need to sort of apply any speed changes gently and let people know that they're happening, because it's those sudden changes where people will lose balance that are quite common. And knowing the rules of the road so you can avoid collisions, know where your rocks are, so get your charts out and have a look where you're going. And also keeping your boat well balanced is really important. So when you're stowing gear, stow it away evenly and make sure that it can't fall out, and sort of, you know, if you hit rough weather or some waves, that it's not going to fall out and hit people or get in the way.
I suppose a lot of those common household hazards like tripping over and stuff like that are even more hazardous when you're on a boat and you can go pitching over the edge.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably the most common way of people hurting themselves, if trips or falls, or, you know, hitting objects in the boat, like if there's speed changes or...
What about fish hooks?
We've seen a few of those too. Yeah, not so common, but they definitely happen. So be careful with your fish hooks.
Yeah, fish hooks through thumbs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yep. They're not nice.
No. So, okay, so what are some of the kind of stupider or more unusual things that you've seen people do to themselves when they're out on boats?
Oh, gosh. We've seen a number. I wouldn't call them stupid, but usually most of them are accidents. But we have seen big fish hooks through hands and things like that, where we've actually had to push it through in order to get it out, and nasty stuff. We've seen a broken arm from getting hit by the boom. We've seen head injuries from being tossed forward in the boat when it stopped suddenly or hit a wave. Back injuries, yep.
And so you've talked about some of the things that the skipper should do.
Yep.
Yeah, what about the passengers?
So passengers, if you can, wear a life jacket. Not only will it help you when you're in the water, but it also acts as a bit of padding if you end up getting hurtled towards something in the boat. If it is rough weather, sit down. If you're going down ladders, go down backwards rather than forwards. It's a lot easier to control your descent, particularly when the boat's moving. And one of the big things for everyone really on a boat as well is to don't go overboard with the booze, because it does impact on your physical well-being and your ability to react in a situation where you need to.
Yeah. It must have some impact as well if you do go into the water, I suppose, if you've been drinking, apart from the fact that you might not have the endurance and so on, but with the cold and that.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've been drinking, you're far more at risk of hypothermia. So, not a good mix.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, now we saw this week, it was earlier in the week, I think, the story of the boat that got found without the skipper and just the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So it most likely gone overboard, you think?
Quite, yeah, well, that's what they're thinking at the moment, yeah.
I don't think so, actually. I mean, I think, you know, you've got a boat, you've got no skipper, you've got a dog, and the dog wasn't hungry.
Yeah.
Draw your own conclusions. Yeah, and people in Chatham Islands, I'd be watching out for that dog if I was you. So you haven't come across...
No comment.
You haven't come across instances of people's pets eating the owners on dogs?
No.
On boats?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay, well, one of the least common injuries, but, you know, not unknown. Okay, so what other tips have you got for us for preventing injuries?
Make sure your vessel's safe as well. Make sure that it's up to scratch with its, you know, like all the engines are working properly and things like that. Particularly if you're going in, you haven't used the boat for a while. It just means that everyone's going to be safe on board once they get there as well. If you can install handrails all over the boat, that's a really good idea. The more places that people can hang on, the better. So we do recommend that, you know, if you think about one hand for the boat, one hand for yourself, you know, to use when you're going around the boat, so that you've always got a hand on something, which you know, just in case. In yachts, watch out for the boom, and make sure that all your safety equipment on board is working. So make sure you do have a first aid kit, then it's got what you need in it. Those sort of things.
Are there any things that people might need in a first aid kit on a boat that they wouldn't need at home?
Bolt cutters or something like that. Like wire cutters are really good for getting fish hooks out, particularly the smaller ones, which you probably wouldn't have necessarily in your first aid kit at home. Lots of bandages, padding, plasters that'll stick in water, and we use strapping tape, sports strapping tape, and like cotton balls and things like that, rather than plasters on our boat, because we just don't find plasters stick. So have a think about those sort of things as well. Panadol, sunscreen. Yeah, that's about it, really.
Yeah, and plenty of water.
Yeah, lots of water. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which people take for granted, you know. But if you're having to use all your drinking water to clean up a wound or something, then
yeah. So lots of extra water. Yeah.
Yeah.
And extra food as well, just in case you do get stuck out there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's some good tips preventing injuries on boats, and I'd say you've got a little book here which has got some tips. So is there any way people can get hold of this if they want to?
Yeah, if you see us around, we've got plenty of copies as well, but it's also, you can get it from Maritime New Zealand, and it's a free booklet or pack that they send out. You can go online and order those.
Safe Boating and Essential Guide. So yeah, a good free booklet and good one to keep up on, to catch up on.
Absolutely, it's a fantastic booklet.
Yeah. Alright, okay, so happy boating, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, watch out for those dogs.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah. And that's Rebecca Armstrong from Waiheke Coast Guard, keeping us up to date with water safety for the month. Well, it's nice to catch up with Rosalie Hennigan from Waiheke Library. How are you, Rosalie?
Very good. Good morning, everyone. A special good morning to you, Chris. And today I'm going to talk about a dream of mine of building. Now,
I was watching Grand Designs the other day, and someone built a house out of tyres. And
I saw that.
Yeah, quite impressive, really.
Oh, it was just amazing.
Do you have books in there on those kind of, you know, building your own thing out of
tyres? Well, I haven't seen one on tyres.
And hay bales and cow manure.
Yes, we do. Adobe is popular on the island, and several books indeed have pages of New Zealand houses, and a couple, you know, Marion Bridges Won't Run, which has features Waiheke houses too. But this one, I actually picked it up and I thought, Builders of the Pacific Coast. And I thought, oh, that might be Kiwi. And then I looked at it and I thought, no, it doesn't look Kiwi. And I started reading it in the way one does. And it says, it's a land of blue and green, the blue of water, ocean bays, estuaries, inlets, rivers and creeks, the green of trees, cedar, fir, hemlock, balsam, alder and spruce, all fed by abundant rainfall. It's along the Pacific coast of North America, from San Francisco up to Vancouver Island, British Columbia. Well, as soon as I started reading the description of the trees, I knew exactly where it was, because I'm familiar with that area from visiting my daughter. So the book became very interesting, but what made me interested were the pictures. Okay, it could be described as a coffee table book because the pictures are so fascinating, but the text is equally a joy. And talking joy, there's one person who is a designer and has built a lot of these homes, and he doesn't allow the owners, he allows them only three visits to the site. because that way, he said, look, that way you get the joy, and there should be joy in building. In other words, stay away. You know, I'm doing it. I'm in charge. And I laughed over that.
I watched a documentary on Frank Lloyd Wright, the famous architect, and it was similarly, I mean, you know, the, didn't want the owners to get in the way of the building design, right down to the furnishings, where all of the furnishings were selected to fit in with the vision
with
of the house.
The house, yes, yes. I didn't realise he did that to his owners, but I think there'd probably be architects in New Zealand who would think, wow, that would be good. But these houses, they're just amazing. And they look as though they fit into the forest or fit into the beach. Or one of them, it sort of looks like a seagull taking off. And in fact, it's called the Gullwing House. And when I read about it, the designer was walking along the beach and saw these big logs. And one of them had a sort of a kink in it, if you like, up the top. Out. And he thought, oh, that would be handy for something. So he shifted it up into his territory. And then later on, when he was looking at this log, thinking, and he could see the shape of a house coming out of it. It was one wing of the house. And so then he had to find the other piece of timber that would drift onto his shore, so he had to go miles looking for a piece that had the same kink to match it. And it's just amazing, the vision of these people. And to quote from the intro again, I don't normally do this, but I think it explains such a lot. Why these buildings? People often ask me this. Here's what I look for. How does the building look in the landscape? Does it fit in? How does it work? Is it practical? Are the building materials sustainable, local? What do the materials look like? How do they function? How are they to live with? The aesthetics, how does it feel inside? Craftsmanship, how well are things put together? And of course, joy, wit and harmony of design and construction. And I thought, every carpenter, everyone who picks up a hammer and nails should either have a copy of this book or at least borrow it from the library. Builders of the Pacific Coast by Lloyd Kahn.
So how does that get categorised in a book like that? Is it under how-tos or?
No, actually, I thought it might be on the how-tos in the 690s, but it's 728, which is the housing category for more architectural
There's
ones.
There's a sign of a good librarian for you. She tells you what category it is by reading the numbers on the side. Excellent.
I had to check, as a matter of fact, because I thought it could be a 690, and I hadn't even looked.
728, everyone.
Yes. But one of the most delightful little things, there's saunas, there's boats that these people have added, made houseboats of, but I think one of the most delightful was this beautiful house that was built, and in the backyard was a chicken coop. And they'd split the cedar shakes so that it resembled the side of the look of a chicken sitting on the nest. I thought, that's absolutely amazing. And gypsy caravans, and you've got to look at this book, Builders of the Pacific Coast by Lloyd Kahn.
Excellent. Well, yeah, and, you know, at a time, I suppose, when we're facing the prospect of subdivisions and lookalike houses on Thompson Point, it's quite nice to think about something which is iconic and unique, isn't it?
It is indeed. Yeah. And that's something which you look at this book and you think, that's an individual who has looked at the timber, looked at what he's had available, and sort of gone from there. And a lot of them have the adobe walls and finishes and that work. And not the cement, so it doesn't, so it can breathe, and it's just amazing what people can do. And I hate to say it, but often when they're left alone, because a lot of these places are not built in towns and cities, they're built in the wilderness on some of these very remote islands. And in fact, one of them is up in the Arctic, and it's an amazing mountaineer's house, and the guy has this tremendous view. So you think, well, what did he build it out of up there? But you'll have to read the book to find out. The other piece of news I should mention is the 2010 Kiwi Kids Good Book Guide, which we have available because the New Zealand Post Children's Books Award is coming up very soon. We've got some of them at the library and more coming, and more going in and out all the time. But I also want to say, here's an activity for some of the children who like to write. over the school holidays. New Zealand Post is proud to support Children's Book Awards, and this year we're creating a commemorative collection of New Zealand children's stories written by New Zealand children. So if you're lucky enough to have a child and that child likes to write and has an imagination, encourage them. Send us their story and you could be one of our published writers. It's got to be the kids' work, mind you. Just visit newzealandpostbookawards.co.nz or your local post shop or your local library and we'll be able to put you in touch with other types. So doesn't seem to be an age limit on it, and I thought, what a wonderful idea.
That is a wonderful idea, and it'd be nice to get some local stories and local children reading them as well, wouldn't it?
It would be. We could do that, perhaps.
Of course we could. Then we could record them, put them on the radio.
Indeed. What a great thought. You see,
That's how it works around here.
That's how it works. So yeah. If your child can write a good story, and I know many of them can, because I've had the joy of judging or helping to judge Bev Young's class, and last year or the year before, Kate Ashworth got second in a New Zealand-wide competition and won a gorgeous prize, and her story was brilliant. So there are children out there who are wonderfully gifted with writing, and your kids maybe, but maybe you've never given them a chance to do something. So just see what they can do. Say, hey, go in for this.
Excellent. Now, have you got some special programs on for the school holidays?
Yes, indeed we do. A lot of them are tied up with inventing, and you will be aware of the recent clock and inventing. So we've got inventions too, and we've got a couple of inventors coming along at Wednesday at 11 o'clock, and we've also got another one on making a musical instrument. So you're inventing a musical instrument. So Wednesday's 11 o'clock, we always have a sort of craft story time, a make something, which is always great fun for the slightly older ones. We still have the younger ones Tuesday and Thursday at 10 o'clock, but the Wednesday is for the school kids who want something to do in the holidays, and I think they'll be very interested. Wednesday at 11 at the library. Okay. And it's free.
And what kind of age group is, so that's school kids, what, from 5 up or a bit older?
Well, again, it's from 5 up, but some of the 5-year-olds prefer the younger stories, but a lot depends on the children and if their brothers and sisters are going along.
Mm.
So I think that's really the critical thing, and we seem to be able to do it so that it makes most of the kids, yeah. I think 5 to 12 probably.
And coming up, and I've kind of thrown this one at you, but coming up over the next couple of weeks, there is a kind of an information and consultation process happening, isn't there, around the new library.
Yes,
so,
in
I mean,
fact,
people may feel they're consulted to death over this, but this isn't about where it's located, this is about what it will be like, isn't it?
Yes, and in fact, at this moment, if you're interested, you can go along to the Ostend Market from 10 till 12 this morning. So hop along and have your thoughts about the things you like and don't like, and have a good look at it and ask the design people lots of good questions. The more questions, the better.
Excellent. So that's this morning at the market, and I know there's a consultation process on the 14th of April.
I'm not sure about that one. I know that we've had one, and then, yes.
And there's some leaflets coming out soon as well.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
And the library, of course, will be a good place to keep in touch with that.
Well, we could tell you what we know, which is
ask the librarians what they want of the library. Well, it's going to be about the size of Oni Roa, and it's going to have electrical carts moving between the shelves, and it's going to be air conditioned, and they've got it all worked out.
Yes, I wish.
All right, thanks very much, Rosalie. And you can out those if you need to remind you, just pop into the library and they'll remind you of the books that Rosalie was speaking about this morning. They'll point you to the right part of the Dewey Decimal System so you can find that and other like books. And nice talking to you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island. Art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Ocean View Road, Oniroa.
Okay, so you're on Island Life, and it's the first Sunday of the month, so I'm joined in the studio by the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight, good morning.
Good morning.
And Alex Stone.
Hi, how are you?
We're all very good. So, Alan and Alex are here to share their views on Waiheke and worldwide events, and what's been on your minds?
Well, one thing that I really noticed the other night, I was in the rare position of taking the bus home, because there's certainly no way I could drive. It was my birthday. And I noticed the bus went across the new bridge that they've just put in at Little O. Now, am I missing something here? I thought the idea of removing the old bridge was to replace it with one that two vehicles could actually drive past each other on. But they seem to have taken it out and replaced it with one more or less exactly the same, only with a little footpath.
Yeah. Yeah. What I liked about it was a big sign that says, Auckland City, getting on with improving your bridge. And
yes, getting on with giving you a bridge just like the old one.
Yeah, I love it.
But there was,
so what actually happened there?
Well, there was quite a call when the proposal to change the bridge or to rebuild the bridge came up from some saying don't make it two-way because the car park and the shops right there and it would be too dangerous.
No, I quite like a narrow bridge. I think it slows everybody down, and to slow people down is our mission in life, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's slow down your hair, as the saying has it. Yeah. Personally, I think that if they wanted a footbridge, they should have built a separate one.
Yeah, nice little
like that lovely one that's just a little further over that leads to the actual beach. That's a great bridge to walk over.
It could make a nice
look down and
thing, yeah.
see the eels and the
sewage
in the sewage. Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think you'd have made a nice little sculptural effect with the new bridge. Yeah.
Now, it's not the only place where there's building or talk of building going on. Of course, we've just had the submissions closed last week for the proposal to put in some nice lookalike houses up on Thompson Point,
which is quite
near the kick around area for you two guys.
Yeah, I look straight across at that, and yeah, it's. The interesting thing with each of these proposals is a creeping factor. You know, these guys say, we've just pulled 19 houses along the edge, and when those houses are built, there'll be a few years later, there'll be another 19 houses along the edge.
Yeah.
And that creeping factor has happened already. The, the mock Georgian manor that was going to be built in place of Deb and Bill Little's place, that was six times the size of Deb and Bill's place, which was already over the limit. So, you know, there's this creep factor. Everyone thinks the new allowance is the baseline, not realizing that it might have been over the limit to start with.
Because, yes, the Thompson's Point development was very worrying because, I mean, we've had a year or two of relief from this sort of creeping development mania. With the economic downturn, it's this feeling that the greed heads have moved off somewhere else that's a bit easier. So I hope that we as a community haven't forgotten how to fight on this sort of stuff.
Yeah. But I've got submission burnout, I must admit. It's a terrible admission, but I didn't put in a submission. I've got burnout.
Well, there is this feeling that you put the submissions in and the scum on the council will simply ignore it. Yeah. I'm also curious as to why you have to submit it to the people who are proposing to make the actual mess in the first place. Surely they could just take the faxes and put them straight in the bin.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that they have to have the opportunity to respond to the points that people bring up, don't they?
Well, the point that I was making, and of course, you know, we're both in this position, we live on Crescent Road East, the news that the road will have to be widened considerably to allow traffic up, because, I mean, that's a windy road going up to the Crescent Road East extension. How are they going to widen that road?
Yeah, they'll be making a big omelette, I reckon.
Well, I mean, we both live on the downward side of Crescent Road East. Now, what happens to our driveways? If you take an extra 6 foot on the road, our driveway won't exactly disappear, but it'll become inaccessible.
Yeah, don't tell anyone, but they probably belong to the council already.
Yes, I think Thompson's Point should be stopped, but... I'm hoping stronger voices than me will do it this time.
Yeah, well, I definitely got a submission in.
Good
idea. Just the thought of the road being widened on the way up to that and just years worth of horrible traffic going up there.
Here's the interesting
horrendous thing.
There's plenty of space for people to move into Waiheke already because only a third of the houses are inhabited anyway. So if someone wants to come and move in here permanently, they just buy one of the uninhabited houses. Mm. They don't have to dig up and build new ones.
It's like this strange obsession people have with retail space on the island. Oh, let's put some retail units in. Look at how many empty retail shops. It's not like we're running short of places to operate retail.
Speaking of which, did you notice the April Fool's Day joke? It's kind of a hoary old one, but there was the McDonald's opening soon here in Onaroa.
Yeah, and quite nicely executed. That has been done before, hasn't it?
Yes. I remember it's been done a good few times before.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the point, does an April Fool's joke have to be...
original.
Yeah.
Coming up with an original joke. It's a difficult thing, yes, as we all know.
So what would you have done for an April Fool's joke?
Give me some time to think about that one.
Something about the Rams' balls, you know, they're there for the plucking.
Not, of course, they're padlocked on
padlocked.
These
well,
you bolt cutters
you could do
to
something with
those
the padlock,
ones.
You know.
Incidentally, sort of getting back to that story, no one has yet contacted us. We're very keen to know what happened to the first two sets off the back end of the Ram.
Yeah.
What are you people doing with them? Are they being
sweet
used as doorstops or what?
Yeah, sweetbreads, maybe. Isn't that the term, sweetbreads? Yes.
No, sweetbreads are something else, I think. Prairie oysters or something like that.
Yeah, but I think it's the same.
Anyway, I don't think anyone's going to be eating concrete ones.
No.
You are a fan, I suppose, of the wry, anonymous public humour, aren't you, Alex?
Absolutely.
But, you know, but what do you think of April Fool's Day? Do you think that's something we should be embracing, or do you think it goes too far into kind of slapstick?
No, I think we should do more of it. And I just think the McDonald's one wasn't clever enough, because it's been done before, you know. So, and there could have been, I must admit, April Fool's sort of passed me by this year. I'm always too bloody busy, but
You think of something about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, go, next year.
Yeah, my problem with April Fool's Day is that my birthday falls on March 31st. So by April Fool's Day, I'm pretty easy to fool. On the morning after my birthday, I'll believe pretty much anything.
Yeah, and probably not in very good humour for a joke. And what about Easter, which of course is, you know, also this year coincided and is an occasion of tradition.
Yeah.
What kind of Easter traditions do you partake of?
Well, the great tradition of avoiding the vast crowds. It's not what it used to be, Easter on the island, I must admit. You know, 10 years ago when Dave Paquette had his act rolling full bore and doing the jazz festival, this place was absolutely packed and heaving. Well, I look at the courtyard out here, there's nobody there. It's busy up at the market this morning, I must admit, but without the jazz festival, yes, I think there's a great big gap. There really ought to be something going
on over
Easter.
There is a jazz festival in Rakino this morning.
Yeah, the Rakino Jazz Festival is all go. Yes. And I went to that once. It was fantastic.
Well, I was on the 9 o'clock boat from town this morning, and the poor buggers going to the Rakino Jazz Festival are all shuttled out there on the Jet Raider. So that was the first ordeal to get to the Rakino Jazz Festival.
Well, poor old Fullers. I mean, well, I don't know if we say poor old Fullers, but certainly the Quick Cat seems to be on its last legs, doesn't it? I mean, you're a commuter, aren't you, Alex?
Yeah,
I mean,
the
changes and the breakdowns and that thing.
What's going to happen with Fullers one day when, you know, regularly what happens, the big boat breaks down, they fire up the old Jet Raider and away it goes. But one morning they'll put the key in the ignition in the Jet Raider and the damn thing won't start. What happens then?
Yes.
Yeah, well, they do get...
Everyone has to get out
there was a couple of years ago, wasn't there, where they were caught short. They had about four boats down.
Yeah.
I just had a thought of my April Fool's Day thing. I would propose a new district plan. Don't laugh, I'm serious. This is local government at its best. The new district plan would force every gentleman on the island would be obliged to water his trees in the dark of night.
Absolutely. Yes, I noticed you picked up on the tree watering incident of a mayor who was civic-minded enough to realise that a tree was definitely in need of watering and went and did it.
Well, there are a lot of trees on this island that could do with a bit of pissing, so maybe we could suggest to all the visitors this weekend that the Waiheke tradition in times of drought...
Yes. Having absorbed the local, the delicious local drinks that are available, recycle them by watering our damn trees.
Yeah, help yourself to the world's best ginger beer from the market. Take three or four glasses and then...
When nature calls, point it back at nature.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do we build ladies into our regional plan?
How do they we can come down with a bucket discreetly later on? But yes, that whole business of the North Shore mayor being pilloried for peeing on a tree. I mean, they're trying to make out like the guys are lush. How much did he drink with two friends? He had, three bottles? No, that just isn't.
Over 4 hours.
Over 4 hours, I'm sorry. Apparently that doesn't put you in serious drinking league.
Yeah. And the thing that really worried me was, who was the tragic soul that followed the mayor and broke the story?
Yes. I
mean, you must be one sick puppy or one not-so-investigative journalist to think this is big stuff.
Yeah.
Well, it's the way of the world now, isn't it, that people are being followed around? And
nobody follows me.
No, well, recently we had Lady Gaga on the island, and she was being followed around. People trying either of you bump into her?
No.
I wouldn't know her if I saw her. Yeah. Who exactly is she? I'm a little out of touch with
her. She's a sort of Madonna lookalike, come lately, whatever. But when I built the front stairs of my house, they're built out of old railway sleepers with big holes in, which are like supermodel traps. Either the long high heels get stuck in there and they don't make it to the front door. And they worked with Lady Gaga. She never made it to the front door. You know, because she never wears anything but high heels. So.
But I mean, the people of her ilk are generally helicoptered straight into Stony Ridge.
Which is pretty much what happened.
Fawned over and then helicoptered out again.
Yeah. I think she went in there for a couple of days, helicoptered in and helicoptered out. But
I wonder if we've got even a Lady Gaga song on your playlist, Chris.
I'm sure there is, and there's some.
I've never ever heard any of her songs.
There's a lot of songs on there.
Yeah.
You're sure they're ghastly. Well,
at the kind of people who find her appealing. I mean, they generally like ghastly music, so.
Right. Yeah.
I saw a T-shirt this morning at the market. There was a bloke, well-dressed sort of bloke, and he had this designer T-shirt that said, "I really love my taste in music."
Yes, I saw that one. That's quite a good one. Although I think the most amusing T-shirt they're selling at the market is the one of the rather stern-looking traffic cop, and the slogan on it says, "The police never find it as funny as you do."
Is that a Waiheke special?
I don't know, but it's always available there.
To get the one that says, "A shady place for sunny characters." Have you seen that one? Waiheke, a shady place for sunny characters.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's a good line.
That is a very good line.
Because it's a lot better than that way ahead and slow. You know, there's some people that are a little tragic in their sort of self-identification. I think the most tragic is the "I'm a local" bumper sticker.
You don't like that?
No.
I love those. I've got one of those.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right.
That's try hard, man. If you're a local, you just are, you know?
Yeah.
I must admit, I don't like the People's Republic of Waiheke.
Right.
I mean, when you see something called the People's Republic, it's usually one of these shattered grey places where people are hauled out of their houses in the early hours of the morning and never seen again.
Yeah.
You know, People's Republic, it doesn't have a really good ring to it.
Well, this does hark back to one of our familiar themes, is that Waiheke really should be a feudal lordship.
Well, I don't know about feudal. Feudal's a little bit tricky. there's a bit too much being required to go out and dig other people's gardens involved with feudalism. But what about the thought of a sort of
the anarchic state,
18th century European style principality?
Principality.
What we need is somebody who really isn't very bright.
But
who can smile and wave nicely?
Yeah, we've got plenty of those.
Yeah, we've got plenty of them. So they're put in charge. While the rest of us get on with them. They tell us what to do, and we do what we want.
Alan, it sounds like you're describing the status quo.
Yeah.
Yes.
But imagine if we put out a call for candidates for the inbred royal family.
Yes, would be required to be inbred.
Yeah.
Yes, you have that sort of vacuous smile. And,
yeah.
And how are you today? Have you come far? That sort of stuff. That's all that's required. And then everyone gets on with it. But of course, what we don't have in the status quo is even those sort of old-style principalities that you used to find through Europe were capable in some way of defending themselves. So we would have to have some sort of outrageous, colourful military uniform with an outrageous hat with feathers on it, with which we would go out and throw council officials into the harbour.
We can defend ourselves, you know. The teenagers taking down road signs, the nature of the roads, the quality of the hospitality industry. We do our best to repel borders.
Well, true, yes.
you know, it takes a lot to, you know, it takes a lot to live here.
Yes, the service industry, bless them, are doing their bit. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Like, we're after coffee. What do you want? Go away.
That's our natural defences, you know.
So we've got a new city and a new kind of local government organisation on the horizon. Do you think that the current slogan, the slow down you hear, do you think that's going to be suitable for the new regime, or is it time we started looking for something else?
Like meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah, I don't know. Or
bend over, this may hurt a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe our slogan could be, we're not with them.
Yes.
You arrive here to, this is a different place. You know, we've got to set ourselves apart. I'm worried that, the whole thing is so obviously a setup for John Banks. And I'm concerned of the shadowy figures of Texter Crosby and an Australian PR company are playing us, and we are too naive to realise that we are being played and have been played for the last 8 months on this whole issue.
Yeah.
It's just...
And we're so used to doing what we're told by council officials that we've lost the ability to fight back.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but maybe, I mean, looking on the bright side, maybe the buggers will push it so hard that we will rise up and start smiting. Which I think would be terrific. I'm all for civil disorder.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of civil disorder and rising up and smiting, there was a story in the paper this week of a group in the US who were planning on just that. And what was their audacious plan was to kidnap a police officer, kill him, and then that would spark up the rest of the US into an uprising against the government.
Yes.
Gosh, no.
These are the kind of that people who call themselves Christians these days.
Yeah. Well, it is Easter.
Yes. If that's what Christians are like, then no wonder people are reading so much Richard Dawkins these days. Yeah. My first thought, I must admit, when I saw the mugshots, was the great line from Bill Hicks about, you ever noticed how people who don't believe in evolution look really unevolved? And what is it with white supremacists? The people who seem most vocal on the idea that white people are somehow superior are always the most pathetic specimens. Anyone with a big, strong chin standing up for white supremacy. It's always somebody with a non-existent chin.
Yeah, yeah.
Deeply pathetic.
Yeah. But how would we stand up as Waiheke against the superpowers, you know? We could declare people like Rodney Hyde and John Banks persona non grata on the island.
Well, they are them already. Off the wharf. I mean, when was the last time any of them came here? I suppose John Banks was over for the wine festival.
Hmm.
Just as an aside, this is one of the things I find curious, having met John Banks on a couple of occasions, is that there is something rather unique about him.
Yeah. He's an interesting character,
most,
no doubt about it.
Most politicians, from the highest to the lowest, do that smarmy politician thing, like, hello, how are you, lovely to meet you, do vote for me, won't you, at least trying to look like they're interested. The eyes say they're lying, but the big phony smile, at least they put in the effort. John Banks doesn't even make that effort. If he's introduced to normal people, it's like, oh, for God's sake, oh yes, hello, you know, can we go and meet some rich people now? He's one of the only politicians who is absolutely flat out honest. He really doesn't want to meet you. He doesn't want to hear what you've got to say. He'd really rather go and hang out with people who make vast amounts of money.
Well, he made that clear, didn't he, when he was elected, about Waiheke. He said, well, you know, I'll listen to you when you can make up your mind what you want.
He certainly is a complex character. You know, chap with five cars and two jet skis is not kind of my kind of guy, but then he adopted two kids that needed a good home, and you know, so that's good.
And certainly that was interesting. He spoke out against the new mining proposals. Yeah, you know, a proposal's got to be bad when John Banks actually condemns it.
Nah, I think that was all fake. I think it was just him trying to look good in the eyes of Aucklanders.
Yeah. Did you see the opinion piece in the paper from, what's that guy, John Rowan, I think it is, who writes opinion pieces in the paper, who said that basically the Coromandel was overrated and didn't matter if they mined that, and that Great Barrier was all right, it had some rough island charm, but you didn't need to go there more than once.
I must admit, that was my impression of it. I did go there about 10 years ago, and it is a very standoffish place. Yeah. And I thought that there'd be some sort of fellow feeling for other Gulf Islanders. And when we said, oh, you know, we're from Waiheke, it's like, oh, right, yes. Good. Are you going back there soon then?
Yeah, I had the same experience.
Yeah, they really don't want you there.
I think what a Great Barrier is, in a societal sense, almost it's on the verge of not being viable. There's only 800 people left there. So it's at the point where the community actually isn't big enough to be a community, you know, if you know what I mean. Those little schools are struggling. They wouldn't have a market like ours. There's just not enough people there to make things cohere. Is that the word?
Yeah. But I still don't think that it should all be just ripped up for mining.
No.
I just think that's going too far.
In my years living in Perth in Western Australia, I had an interesting sideline view on the pro and anti-mining debate. And my most favourite was a bumper sticker on a great big 4x4, obviously a mining engineer making it big in Perth. And the bumper sticker said, obviously addressed to the Greenie faction, this is what the bumper sticker said: "Your nose ring, dearie, came from a mine." which puts it all in perspective. We all say we're anti-mining, but we're surrounded by metal as we speak now, and I'm going to go and jump in a car to go home.
We've got to come from somewhere.
Yeah.
And what were they going to dig up? Gold, was it?
Yeah. Apparently there's gold in those hills.
Yeah. Well, at least they're not thinking of it. They haven't found any here.
But, you know, here's a very interesting thing about mining. Waihee is the biggest gold mine in New Zealand. And if people say we get rich out of mining, why are the people in Waihee so poor? But we'll be pleased to know that Waiheke is going to contribute to the social milieu of Waihee. Mike Morgan, bless his socks, is immigrating to Waihee. And when I asked him why he was going, he said, "At least there's a big long drop there, eh?"
Yes, our loss, Waihee's gain. Yeah. It will be very sad to see Mike go.
Apparently he can get himself a bigger property there. That's the deal. With by a big half, long drop.
Yeah. By half the town.
Yeah.
Oh, it will be sad to see him go for sure.
Yeah.
All right, the Opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone, joining us again, as they do on the first Saturday of every month. So tune in on the first Saturday of May, and they'll bring you more of their wonderful insights and commentary.
And don't forget, in the meantime, if anyone wants to form a people's militia, let's start thinking about an outrageous uniform.
Yeah, and we're also looking for that inbred royal family, remember? That stopped us all.
For when we declare a principality.
Okay, on to Lady Gaga.
Okay, it's that time of the year. It happens four times a year when the Waiheke Community Education put out their program for the following term, and they've just put that out. You can pick it up in the library and lots of other places around the island, and a whole range of courses which are starting in April and May. And there's a couple of new courses and a couple of quite interesting ones there, and one we're going to talk about this morning is a free course on sustainable living, which is tutored by Ian Scott and others, but here to talk about it is Millie Watkins. Good morning, Millie.
Good morning.
So I'll just get you to come a little closer to your microphone there. That's
okay.
It. So this course, Sustainable Living, in a nutshell, what's the course about?
Well, first off, on April 17th, Ian is going to be giving a free talk on resilient lifestyles. And so that's an issue that's been coming up lately, is people looking at how we're going to be dealing with possible things coming up with climate change and a lot of those other issues. Certainly, we just recently saw an article where Tony Sears was a little concerned that all of our services are coordinated off-island, and we're starting to see, waking up a little bit to some of the things that are coming down the pipe for us, and are we going to be ready? And so the resiliency talk is a free talk that's going to be given to bring a lot of people in to start looking at that, and then from there on, they'll be doing four courses for a total of $30, which is quite a reasonable amount for basically 4 2-hour sessions that will each go into. Each session will be a different part of the resiliency picture. So we'll be dealing with waste issues and water issues and energy and sustainable building, or just in terms of adapting our buildings to make them more sustainable.
So will this kind of be, I suppose, a starting point for people, an introduction into each of those topics, and then they can go on from there and do some more work in those areas?
Exactly. And it's also an opportunity for some of the talented people that we have on the island who are already working in these areas to come along and tell people what they're doing. So one of the ideas we have is to have a visit to a house that is already incorporating a lot of these things. So rather than just hearing someone talk about it, we can actually go and see what someone has incorporated, which often has a lot more value for us.
Right, so there's some field trips as well.
Yes.
Yeah, good stuff. And so who are some of the other people who are involved in the course?
We have Jerome Partington, who's an architect and who deals with sustainable design and is in an architecture firm in Auckland. Denise Roach has said that she would like to help out with delivering the waste topic, and Craig Brown, who does grey water on the island, will be helping out with the water issue.
I mean, I imagine there's a lot of people who feel like they'd like to live more sustainably, but just aren't quite sure. You know, it all just kind of seems too big or too hard, really.
It reminds me of when you're a first-time parent, and you know, you're trying to navigate this totally unknown world that you've just been plunged into. And the best thing is to learn from other people who are already doing it, people who have got the scars and, you know, the funny stories to tell about it. And so, yeah, we're all learning together, and we've got some people who have been working on this for a while that we can learn from. But even they would say that we're all learning from each other on this.
And are there hopes that there will be some kind of network evolve out of this? So as well as coming to the course, that people will stay in touch, share ideas, and perhaps, you know, share those out further in the community?
Absolutely. I think it will make us more aware of the things that are already happening on Waiheke. We live in a rather privileged place because we do have some initiatives that have already been started. So that's one part of it, is becoming aware of the things that are already happening that we can put our energy into. And as we go along, finding things that any one of us in particular is passionate about, and starting up a group around that.
Because there does seem to be, you know, there are a number of different initiatives, aren't there, and a number of the same people involved with those. I'm thinking of things like, say, I don't know, Transition Towns, Ubi, the One Waiheke, and, you know, a number of different things, but they seem to kind of operate in slightly different spheres, don't they?
They do. And we're constantly looking for that unifying voice. And as you were saying earlier about John Banks saying he'd listen to Waiheke when they had a unified voice. I think our voice is more unified than even we imagine. We just haven't found that arena to actually put it out there as a cohesive vision. I know a lot of people have been very excited about Colin Bearden's project with the Waiheke Forever, Waiheke Biosphere Project. And I think that will be one avenue to get everyone behind one message. And I don't think we're that far off. I think we get lost a bit in the details, but I think when we go up a level and we start talking about just basic things like water, energy, and waste, obviously we've just come off, you know, 10 years of developing a groundbreaking waste management system that was taken away from us, but was, you know, a standout program. And just recently at the Onatangi Beach Races, we had the Towards Zero Waste event, which is unique in the Southern Hemisphere. So we are doing things. For some reason, we're able to get together and do things that other communities find very difficult.
And, I mean, should you know, who can come to this thing? Is it all going to be, you know, bran muffins and hand-woven jerseys and hay bale house types, or is it for everyone?
What we're finding coming along to these groups is it's not people who are, say, you know, denizens of that group, but that just this is an issue that unites everyone. And one of the interesting things that comes up for me from time to time is people saying, well, you'd be interested in this because you're green, but I'm conservative. And I find that a really interesting dichotomy, because it's not something that I grew up with. My parents were staunch conservatives. And in the 70s, when, you know, the word came out about recycling and that being the best thing to do, they became one of the first and most consistent recyclers. So, you know, when I see now, years on, the word green being associated politically, we're not talking about politics and we're not talking about a certain lifestyle. We're actually talking more about a return to common sense and some things that we may have lost track of, and possibly some things that we know now that have changed over time, that we have the benefit of experience and new learning now. So, yeah, I think that we're talking about taking practical steps, and that's everybody. That's not someone from just certain lifestyles.
And does the course cover off, I mean, is it for beginners? Is it for people who've already dipped their toe into that kind of sustainable area or both? Or how will that work?
It's really going to start from the entry level, someone who hasn't considered any changes, and in any group that, you know, you're meeting, just as if you were a first-time parent. You know, you're going to have questions that you're asking for the first time, but then it's going to spark a discussion and people are going to learn from it who have been at this for a while. So really, you're dealing with an open-ended kind of a group who are learning from each other.
Oh, it sounds like a very interesting course. So it kicks off on, well, the introductory session is on Saturday the 17th of April from 1 to 3, and that's the free session, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, and then we've got the 5 weeks at $30, which is remarkably cheap, from the 17th of... So what is so the it must be the next week that the paying ones kick off.
Yeah, yep. It'll run on for the following 4 Saturdays.
Yeah, 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday, which would be great. And that's at the Community Education Centre. And if you want to enrol in that or any of the other courses that the Community Education Centre are offering, and there's a whole range of them there, there's public speaking, there's languages, there's social media being offered by Brent Simpson, one of our team here at the station, woodwork, sewing, you should get one of these pamphlets. But also check out their website, which is looking very flash, and that's www.waihekicomed.co.nz, and you can enrol on there and pay on there and everything. It's fantastic. Hey, thank you very much, Millie.
Thank you, Chris.
That sounds like a great course, actually.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, actually.
Mm. So that's Sustainable Living starting on 17th of April, just a couple of weeks away, so don't miss out.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.